Imagine walking into a big box store. You've got, say, $2,500 in your pocket, and you are ready to buy a top-tier computer part.
A fun day, right?
Right, exactly. You take the box to the register, pull out your credit card, and the cashier looks at you and says, well, they say, I just need you to look directly into this camera for a live facial scan, and then go ahead and punch in your social security number.
It sounds completely absurd.
It sounds like a dystopian sci-fi movie, like some cyberpunk fiction where mega corporations literally own your identity. But if you're reading the May 2026 tech coverage, you know this isn't fiction. This is reality, and it is happening to you right now.
Yeah, it really is the ultimate collision course. I mean, we spent the last 2 decades treating the internet like it was this ethereal, weightless cloud, but that cloud is getting incredibly heavy, and right now is crashing violently back down to earth, and is taking our supply chains and honestly our privacy right down with it.
Welcome to this deep dive. Today, we are looking at a massive stack of sources from Tekin Game. We've got everything from deep hardware market analyses to some really terrifying cybersecurity incident reports.
There's a lot to get through.
There is. And our mission today is to make sense of a month that feels like, well, like the tech industry hit fast forward and just broke the remote. We're unpacking this wild convergence of events. You've got the trillion-dollar AI race, the sudden and really painful death of cheap gaming hardware, and these unprecedented machine-speed cybersecurity meltdowns.
Right, and they're all connected.
Exactly. We want to connect the dots to show you how the insatiable rise of artificial intelligence is triggering a massive chain reaction, a reaction that touches the physical infrastructure of the internet and, the unchangeable biology of your own face. So, okay, let's unpack this. Where do we even begin to make sense of May 2026?
I think we have to start at the absolute source of the friction. Because the central theme emerging from all these Tekin Game reports is the sheer tension between exponential software leaps and the absolute unyielding physical limits of our hardware and of our reality.
Okay, so the software versus the physical world.
Precisely. And to understand the physical crisis, we first have to look at what the software is suddenly doing. Because we are watching the era of the chatbot basically die.
Just totally gone.
Right? It's being replaced by the era of the autonomous agent.
Right. And the absolute nail in the coffin for that chatbot era came directly from Google I/O. They announced Gemini 3.5 Flash. And reading the coverage, I mean, the benchmark scores almost look like a typo.
They really did.
Specifically, the score on Terminal Bench, it hit 76.2%. Now, for anyone listening who hasn't been, obsessively tracking the minutiae of AI developer benchmarks, break down what Terminal Bench actually measures. Because this isn't just asking an AI to generate a poem in a browser window.
No, not at all. We have to move way past the idea of an AI sitting passively in a chat window, just waiting for a prompt from you. Terminal Bench measures true agentic coding capabilities.
Agentic meaning it has agency.
Exactly. It tests whether an AI model can operate inside a real-world developer terminal entirely on its own.
So it's not just writing a little snippet of Python and handing it to me so I can fix it.
Far from it. It writes the code, yes,
Right.
but then it actually attempts to run it. And when the code inevitably throws an error, because code always does,
Oh, always.
the AI reads the terminal logs, figures out what went wrong, writes a patch, installs any missing open source dependencies it might need, runs the code again, and then deploys the final software.
Wow.
So a 76.2% score means Gemini 3.5 Flash can autonomously complete over three quarters of complex multi-step software engineering tasks without a human ever even looking at the screen.
That is insane. And the speed. The sources say it's operating at around 300 tokens per second.
Yeah, which is roughly four times faster than its main competitors right now.
Right. So to put a visual on that for you listening, it can write, debug, and deploy a 1,000-line file of code in under 10 seconds. We used to think of AI as this, really smart, incredibly fast encyclopedia. But this is like hiring an over-caffeinated senior developer who writes the code, publishes the app to the store, provisions the cloud servers, and manages the database all while you are fast asleep.
And that is exactly the paradigm shift Google is pushing here. Their explicit messaging at I/O was basically, we no longer want to talk to AI. We want AI to work for us.
Which is a huge distinction.
It is. They paired this model with Google AI Studio, which allows users to build fully functional Android apps in minutes without writing a single line of code. But they also introduced Gemini Spark, which takes this whole agentic capability and pushes it directly onto consumer devices.
On the device itself.
Right, operating 24/7, even when you're completely offline.
Just imagine that for a second. Think about your daily workflow. The emails you have to categorize, the calendar invites you to negotiate back and forth, the documents you format. Imagine an agent living locally on your laptop, handling 80% of that routine bureaucracy while your computer is literally shut and sitting in your backpack.
It's a fundamental change in the economic value of software. But, you know, Google isn't the only one redefining this space.
Yeah.
Anthropic's moves this month are arguably even more disruptive to the market hierarchy.
Oh, absolutely.
The Taking Game reports detail Anthropic closing a historic $65 billion Series H funding round.
Yeah, I had to read that number twice. $65 billion, that puts their post-money valuation at nearly $1 trillion. They're completely bypassing OpenAI, which was, what, valued at around $852 billion just a few months ago?
Something like that, yeah.
Why is private capital throwing the GDP of Switzerland at Anthropic?
Because Anthropic realized something vital about the enterprise market. Fortune 500 companies don't actually want raw, unpredictable, artificial general intelligence.
They don't want a rogue superbrain.
Exactly. They want predictability, safety, and positive cash flow. While other labs have been relentlessly pursuing this raw, unrestricted reasoning power, Anthropic built an enterprise-first machine. With this massive funding, they launched Claude Opus 4.8. And their primary marketing metric isn't how smart it is. The metric is that it is 4x more honest.
I really love that phrasing, honesty as a measurable benchmark, because what they're really talking about is hallucination, right?
Yes, exactly.
That's the industry's polite term for when an AI confidently fabricates a complete lie.
Precisely. If you are integrating AI into, say, a massive hospital network's diagnostic pipeline or a global law firm's discovery process, you simply cannot afford a system that guesses.
Right. A hallucination there is a massive liability risk.
A huge one. So Claude Opus 4.8 has been aggressively fine-tuned to declare its own limitations. It actively maps its own knowledge gaps and says, I do not have enough verified data to answer that safely.
Wow.
In the corporate world, an AI that knows exactly when to shut up is infinitely more valuable than an AI that tries to answer everything.
It's the ultimate enterprise killer feature. And this hyper-focus on corporate efficiency, it's making incredible waves for smaller startups, too. Look at Glean.
Oh, yeah. Glean is a perfect example.
According to the sources, they hit $300 million in annual recurring revenue in just 15 months. And they did it entirely by tackling the sheer cost of running these models using something called a context graph.
What's fascinating here is how Glean solves a massive architectural problem. Because every time an enterprise employee asks an internal AI a question, the system usually has to retrieve massive amounts of company data, feed it into the prompt window.
A context window, right?
Exactly, the context window. And then run the massive, incredibly expensive model to generate an answer. Glean's context graph maps the semantic relationships of all the enterprise data beforehand.
Okay, so it pre-organizes everything.
Right. It fundamentally understands who authored what, what teams are connected, and what documents are relevant without needing to shove it all into a massive LLM every single time you ask a question.
So instead of brute forcing a massive query through a, you know, a 405 billion parameter model, which costs an absolute fortune in compute, the context graph does all the heavy lifting up front. That dramatically reduces the amount of data the actual LLM needs to process.
Exactly. It reduces enterprise AI computational costs by roughly 70%.
That's massive.
It is. They built an AI that makes operating other AI cheaper. In a market where compute is rapidly becoming the most expensive resource on Earth, that is a gold mine.
It totally is. But if you build an AI that can autonomously map data, write code, and iterate in a terminal, well, what happens when you point that exact same autonomous engine at a visual interactive space?
Where things get really messy.
Right. What happens when it starts generating not just lines of code, but entire worlds? That leads us straight into the civil war currently ripping through the gaming and creative industries right now.
The Taking Game coverage highlights the explosive launch of Unreal Engine 6 this month, and specifically its integration of Metaforge AI. This is a profound leap. We aren't talking about generating a static 2D image like we used to see.
Right, not just a flat picture.
Exactly. Metaforge is a multimodal generative AI deeply integrated into the actual physics and rendering pipeline of the engine itself.
And the examples from the sources are just staggering. A developer can type a text prompt, something like a medieval courtyard, cobblestone streets, heavy rain, red banners, and within 30 seconds, Metaforge generates a fully modeled 3D environment.
And it's not just a hollow shell.
No. The cobblestones have physical displacement maps. The rain dynamically interacts with the lighting. What used to take a whole team of environmental artists maybe 3 weeks to build is now happening in half a minute.
And the economic implications of that are immediate.
Okay.
Naughty Dog, the Sony studio, famous for visually stunning games like The Last of Us, just announced they are completely abandoning their proprietary in-house game engine.
Which is huge news for the industry.
Massive. They're migrating entirely to Unreal Engine 6. Maintaining their own engine was costing them upwards of $50 to $80 million annually. The executive suite simply cannot ignore a tool that promises a 40% reduction in overall production time.
Sure, the executives are popping champagne. But the actual humans making the games, they are facing an existential crisis here. We saw over 2.5 million 3D artists and animators launch a massive digital strike this month. The hashtag #NoAIInMyEngine trended globally for days.
It was everywhere.
They aren't just angry, they're terrified. And they are demanding revenue sharing, extreme transparency on what data MetaForge was trained on, and most importantly, a kill switch. A mandatory toggle to disable AI generation tools entirely within the workspace.
Their anxiety is completely justified by the analytics, honestly. The risk of job replacement isn't theoretical anymore. It's already quantifiable, though it is highly stratified based on the discipline.
What do you mean by stratified?
Well, environment artists, the people handcrafting the rocks, the foliage, the background buildings, they are facing a projected 65% replacement risk because the models are exceptionally adept at generic topological world building.
Oh, okay. But the characters themselves are a different story, right? The sources peg character artists at a much lower replacement risk, something around 25%.
Yes, because humans are evolutionarily wired to detect the slightest anomaly in a human face or physical movement.
The uncanny valley.
Exactly. The uncanny valley is still a massive hurdle for generative models. Designing a protagonist that carries real emotional weight, where the micro-expressions convey grief or determination, that still requires human authorial intent.
But let me push back on that idea of human authorial intent for a second, because the physical look of a game is only half the battle. What about the narrative? At the Game Developers Conference, GDC 2026, the big reveal was agentic games. They showcased NPCs, non-playable characters that are entirely powered by large language models acting as game masters.
Right, the transition from static dialogue trees to dynamic, self-aware entities.
Exactly. These NPCs don't just have a few pre-recorded lines of dialogue that you click through. They actively profile your behavior in real time. They rewrite the overarching story arcs on the fly.
Based on your choices.
Right, they organically generate side quests based on what you destroyed in the previous town. They even coordinate ambushes by talking to other AI characters. The world is reacting to you dynamically. But my question is, if the game reacts randomly to everything I do, do we lose the curated artistic vision of the game director? Does a video game stop being a piece of authored art, like a great novel or a carefully paced movie, and just become a chaotic, random simulation?
This raises a really important question, and it's basically the defining philosophical debate of game design right now. Proponents argue this creates the ultimate bespoke experience, a living ecosystem where no two players ever have the exact same journey.
Which sounds cool on paper.
It does. But you are highlighting the real cost. Great storytelling relies on tension, pacing, and emotional peaks crafted by a human who actually understands psychology. Handing the narrative reins over to an LLM might give you infinite content, but infinite content doesn't necessarily mean meaningful content.
No, it's an incredible tension between limitless interaction and curated art. But honestly, whether you view agentic games as a creative utopia or some soulless dystopia, there is a massive physical roadblock sitting right in front of us.
A very expensive roadblock.
Exactly. Generating these photorealistic 3D worlds in real time and running millions of self-aware LLM characters simultaneously, it requires an astronomical amount of computational horsepower. And that insatiable digital hunger is currently physically breaking the global hardware supply chain.
Which brings us to the hardware crisis, or as the ticking game analysts have dubbed it, the rampocalypse.
I know, it sounds like hyperbole, right? But the data is genuinely grim. In the spring of 2026, the entire hardware market just hit a brick wall. The AI cloud hyperscalers, the massive data centers running Gemini, Claude, and OpenAI, they are ravenously acquiring the entire planet's manufacturing capacity for high bandwidth memory, specifically HBM3E.
They are buying everything.
Right. I want to drill into this because why is memory the bottleneck here rather than the processors themselves?
To understand the rampocalypse, you really have to understand how large language models fundamentally operate. LLMs are not compute-bound. They are memory-bound.
Okay, unpack that.
Generating a single token of text requires pulling the entire massive weight of the model out of memory and pushing it through the processor. The actual math isn't the slow part. Moving the data is the slow part.
So if a traditional graphics processor is like a, well, like a hyper-efficient factory that can build a million cars a day, standard RAM is like having a single dirt road leading into the factory. It doesn't matter how fast the factory works if all the supply trucks get stuck in traffic on that dirt road.
That is a perfect analogy. The factory starves. High bandwidth memory, HBM3E, solves this by essentially building a 500-lane superhighway directly into the factory shipping bay.
Wow.
Physically, they stack the memory chips vertically on top of each other and connect them with microscopic copper pillars called through-silicon vias, placing them mere millimeters from the actual processor. It allows for massive instantaneous data transfer.
But building that microscopic 500-lane highway is incredibly difficult, isn't it?
Extremely. Global silicon foundries like TSMC have a hard, finite capacity for this kind of advanced packaging. And because an AI accelerator chip destined for an enterprise data center is astronomically more profitable than a graphics card destined for a teenager's bedroom, the foundries are prioritizing AI orders.
Because that's where the money is.
100% of the time. The gaming hardware economy, which used to dictate silicon trends, is no longer an independent market. It is now entirely subordinate to the needs of AI.
And you, the consumer, are absorbing that cost directly. Look at Sony. They sent shockwaves through the industry this month by announcing the PlayStation 5 Pro will launch at $899, a console, for $900. And the base PS5 actually went up in price to $649.
It's unheard of.
On the PC side, it's even worse. Nvidia entirely canceled their highly anticipated RTX 50 series super mid-generation refresh. Canceled it outright because 100% of their TSMC allocation is monopolized by their Blackwell AI data center chips.
The physical scarcity is driving intense gentrification of the hobby. But this hardware inflation is being compounded by the radical new software demands of these AI-integrated games. We talked about games generating real-time environments. The physical toll that takes on a local machine is just staggering.
Oh, the Call of Duty specs. This blew my mind. So the new Call of Duty requires a 400 gigabyte base install, which is huge, but, you know, not entirely unprecedented these days. But then the Taking Game Report details a mandatory 100 gigabyte dedicated PCIe 4.0 NVMe SSD cache partition.
Let's break down why that is so radical.
Yeah, please do. Because formatting 100 gigs of my hard drive exclusively for a single game just to get it to run seems insane.
It is utilizing an architecture similar to direct storage, but on an extreme scale.
Mm-hmm.
Because high-speed VRAM on the graphics card is so incredibly expensive and limited right now due to the rampocalypse, developers can no longer load an entire level's assets into the GPU memory.
They just don't have the space.
Right. Instead, the software is treating your ultra-fast solid-state hard drive as a massive, slightly slower pool of RAM. It streams 8K textures and AI-generated topological data straight from the SSD to the GPU in real time, completely bypassing the central processor.
So the game engine is desperately scrounging for bandwidth wherever it can possibly find it. And if you want to actually see all those 8K textures at high frame rates, it is an investment that makes a car down payment look cheap.
Oh, without a doubt.
The new Samsung Odyssey Z monitor launched, a $3,000 1,000 hertz display. But you can't just buy it and plug it into a normal rig. It requires dual display port 2.1 cables, which essentially means you need a $2,500 RTX 5090 graphics card just to push the pixels. We are looking at an estimated $8,600 for a top-tier PC build right now.
Which is exactly why hardware manufacturers are desperately looking for a software escape hatch. NVIDIA is actively developing their Rubin architecture.
Right, to get around the hardware limits.
The underlying goal of Rubin is neural rendering. Instead of relying on raw silicon to calculate and rasterize millions of polygons geometrically, which obviously hits a physical bottleneck, they want to use generative AI algorithms to natively predict and generate the final pixels. They're trying to use AI to bypass the physical silicon limits that AI itself created.
So, what does this all mean for you, the listener? It means gaming, which has historically been one of the most accessible democratic forms of digital entertainment, is rapidly transforming into an ultra-luxury hobby. If you have a capable PC right now, treat it well, because building a new one is becoming a financial nightmare.
And this intense scarcity creates a secondary crisis. High demand, low supply, and massive profit margins have resulted in scalpers and automated bot networks completely dominating the hardware market. They are buying up whatever limited stock does exist in milliseconds.
Which perfectly brings us back to that terrifying scenario we opened the show with. The scalping crisis got so bad that retailers finally decided to fight the bots. But their solution forces consumers to make a chilling Faustian bargain. We are trading our fundamental privacy just for the right to access the market.
The Taking Game market analyses show a massive overnight crash in the secondary market. RTX 5090 prices plummeted from $5,000 down to their $2,500 MSRP.
Which, you know, looks great on a graph. You think, awesome, the good guys won. Consumers can finally buy hardware. Mm. But then you look at how Amazon and Walmart achieved this. They rolled out draconian anti-bot checkout protocols.
It's intense.
To add one of these highly sought-after GPUs to your cart, you must turn on your webcam and submit to a live volumetric facial scan. You have to type in your social security number so they can cross-reference it with government databases in real time.
Yep.
And you have to agree to a 90-day device fingerprinting lockdown.
Meaning the hardware is digitally locked to your specific IP and motherboard to prevent immediate resale. If we connect this to the bigger picture, we are watching the exact scenario MIT privacy researchers have been warning us about for years. By trying to solve a retail bot problem, we have authorized the creation of a massive honeypot of biometric data. We are permanently surrendering our unchangeable biological markers just to buy consumer electronics.
And that's the crucial distinction here. If a hacker breaches a database and steals your password, it's a headache, sure, but you change the password. If a hacker breaches Walmart's biometric honeypot and steals the volumetric geometry of your face and your social security number, well, you can't get a new face.
No, you definitely can't.
You can't just reset your SSN online. So I have to ask you, the listener, directly. Are you willing to hand over your face and your government ID to a mega retailer just to play the newest video games? Because the gentrification of hardware isn't the only place we are paying a hidden premium. The software itself is extracting a toll.
Because the hardware install base is shrinking due to these costs, and AAA development budgets have bloated to $300 million or more, game publishers simply cannot rely on traditional sales volume anymore. To offset costs without raising the base price of games beyond $70,
yeah.
Epic Games is injecting dynamic, geo-targeted live advertisements directly into titles running on Unreal Engine 5.5.
This is wild. You pay $70 for a premium fantasy RPG. You are walking through a medieval city, you turn a corner, and there is a digitally injected real-world billboard for a local fast food joint based on the actual GPS location of your computer.
It really breaks the immersion.
Completely. You paid a premium price, but you are still the product. You are still subject to live surveillance capitalism right inside the escapism of the game.
It creates a fascinating philosophical divide among the tech giants regarding how this user data should be handled. We see Apple and Google pulling in one direction and Meta pulling hard in the opposite direction.
Break that down for us. What's the Apple and Google approach?
The leaked specs for Apple's iOS 27 show a feature called the Siri Dynamic Island running Apple Intelligence. Similarly, Google announced a premium hardware tier called Google Books. Both of these initiatives are designed to keep the incredibly heavy AI processing and data tracking localized entirely on the physical device.
So it never leaves the phone or laptop.
Right. They want to offer the hyper-personalization of an AI assistant, but architecturally prevent that sensitive data from ever being sent to a centralized cloud server.
They want privacy to be the premium feature you pay for, but Meta is taking the exact opposite route with the launch of an app called Forum.
Meta's Forum is essentially a direct attack aimed at dismantling Reddit's market dominance. But Reddit's entire culture is built on anonymity and pseudonyms, right?
Yeah, nobody uses their real name on Reddit.
Exactly. Forum takes the architecture of Facebook groups and builds a standalone discussion platform based entirely on verified real-world identities. They want to strip away the anonymity of community discussion and tie every hyper-niche interest directly to your real-world profile and your data graph.
It's a massive multi-front societal trade-off. We are trading anonymity, geographical privacy, and biometric security for, you know, bot-free checkout carts, sustainable game prices, and smarter assistants. But here is the terrifying reality check of May 2026. Handing over your biometric data and relying on corporate servers to keep it safe assumes that flawless cybersecurity exists. And as we look at the machine speed cyber warfare happening right now, flawless security is a myth.
The Teakin Game incident reports from this month paint a very clear, very grim picture. The cybersecurity landscape has fundamentally, irreversibly changed. A report from Google's Threat Intelligence Group confirms the discovery of the very first AI-generated zero-day exploit ever deployed in the wild.
A zero-day exploit, the holy grail for hackers. A vulnerability so deep and obscure that the software creator doesn't even know it exists, giving them 0 days to patch it before it's weaponized.
That's why they're so dangerous.
Historically, discovering a zero-day required a brilliant human mind spending months painstakingly reverse-engineering code, looking for a tiny logic error. But now...
Now, we are witnessing the industrialization of vulnerability discovery. Autonomous AI systems are acting as massive, tireless fuzzing engines.
Fuzzing engines?
Yeah, they rapidly feed malformed data into millions of lines of code, observing the crashes and identifying complex logic flaws that a human mind would never spot.
Then
the AI autonomously writes the exploitation malware to target that specific flaw. The speed of cyber warfare has officially shifted from human speed to machine speed.
And this threat went from theoretical to catastrophic because of a massive failure at Meta. Their flagship 405 billion parameter AI model, Llama 4, fully leaked to the dark web. And to be clear, this wasn't the sanitized public-facing version that refuses to talk about violence.
Yeah, not at all.
This was the raw, uncensored base model, no ethical guardrails, no safety filters.
The consequences were immediate. Security researchers confirm malicious actors are using the uncensored Llama 4 to generate highly sophisticated polymorphic malware.
Stop there for a second. Explain polymorphic malware, because that is a massive step up from traditional viruses.
It is. Traditional antivirus software works kind of like a bouncer at a club, checking a list of known troublemakers. It looks for a specific signature or identifiable string of code in a file. Polymorphic malware utilizes an onboard LLM to completely rewrite its own underlying code signature every single time it executes, while maintaining its malicious function.
So it changes its disguise continuously.
Exactly. The bouncer never recognizes it. Furthermore, hackers are using the model to generate highly technical, step-by-step bomb-making instructions. The fallout was so severe, it triggered an emergency session in the U.S. Senate.
I want to debate this for a second because this hits right at the core of the open source philosophy. Proponents of open source AI, like Meta themselves, always argue that open sourcing the code democratizes technology. It prevents a few massive corporations from monopolizing the future. And I mean, I agree with that in principle. We don't want three companies owning the printing press of the 21st century.
But the counter argument is the reality of the capability overhang.
Exactly. If we democratize technology that is this powerful, aren't we inevitably democratizing weapons-grade hacking tools? If anyone with an internet connection can download a 405 billion parameter brain that can write polymorphic 0 days, aren't we just handing out loaded digital machine guns to anyone who asks?
This is the exact debate tearing the cybersecurity community apart right now, and it extends perfectly to the Nightmare Eclipse controversy. It's a fierce debate between responsible disclosure and public accountability.
Oh, this story's wild. So a security researcher going by the handle Nightmare Eclipse discovered six massive zero-day vulnerabilities deep inside Windows Defender and BitLocker. Two of them were kernel-level exploits, meaning they grant absolute total control over the operating system, which the researcher named Blue Hammer and Yellow Key. Nightmare Eclipse claims they privately reported these to Microsoft through the standard bounty channels, but Microsoft allegedly ignored the reports for 3 straight months. No patch, no response.
So Nightmare Eclipse took drastic action.
They dropped all the functioning exploit codes publicly on GitHub, just put it out there for anyone to see and use. And in response, Microsoft, who owns GitHub, just completely banned the researcher's account and scrubbed the repository.
Let's examine both sides of this impartially, because it is a vital debate. The argument supporting Nightmare Eclipse is that massive corporations often prioritize feature development over security patching to save money. If a vulnerability is kept private, the corporation has no financial incentive to rush a fix.
Because nobody knows about it.
Right. Supporters argue that public disclosure, creating the immediate threat of a catastrophic hack, is the only leverage a researcher has to force a lazy vendor to actually protect their users. Transparency forces accountability.
I see the logic there, I really do, but let me counter that. By dropping fully functioning kernel-level exploit code on a public forum, the researcher instantly put millions of everyday users at severe, immediate risk. They created a chaotic window where malicious hackers have the weapon and users have absolutely no shield because a patch doesn't even exist yet. You aren't just punishing the corporation, you are literally holding the user base hostage.
It's an incredibly delicate balance.
Mm-hmm.
But what is undeniable is that the market is rapidly adapting to this machine speed threat environment. The Teking Game reports note an Israeli startup named Ocean recently raised $28 million to deploy what they call agentic email security.
More agents.
Yes. They're taking localized AI agents and deploying them inside enterprise networks to analyze the context, tone, and intent of every single incoming email in milliseconds. It's designed to fight highly sophisticated AI-generated spear phishing. It is literally an AI arms race happening silently in our inboxes.
Fighting AI with AI. But here's where it gets really interesting. These vulnerabilities, these attacks, they're no longer just software bugs contained inside a computer monitor. The digital warfare is jumping out into the physical world, attacking physical infrastructure, and breaching some genuinely terrifying ethical boundaries.
The transition from digital disruption to physical consequence was starkly illustrated this month. The physical infrastructure of our digital lives is shockingly fragile. Hackers successfully executed a sophisticated spoofing attack against Elon Musk's Starlink network.
How does one even spoof a satellite constellation?
Starlink relies on a massive array of low Earth orbit satellites, communicating with ground-based phased array antennas. The hackers managed to target and exploit vulnerabilities in the light encryption protocols, managing the handover of data between satellites over New York and California.
So when the signal jumps from one satellite to another?
Exactly. By confusing the routing tables, they effectively took down critical communications for hospitals and military bases in those regions for 4 straight hours.
And the attacks weren't just coming from the skies, they were coming from the oceans. This is the one that really rattled me. Autonomous underwater drones, and nobody knows who deployed them yet, physically severed the TAT-T14 and AC-1 undersea fiber optic cables.
For context, these cables are the actual backbone of the internet. They are roughly the thickness of a garden hose, resting on the ocean floor, carrying massive bundles of fiber optic glass that transmit terabits of data per second between continents.
And a drone with cutting shears half a mile underwater just snipped them. It caused massive 500 millisecond ping spikes across Europe. It completely crippled cloud gaming services, disrupted high-frequency financial trading platforms, and the geopolitical implications were so severe it triggered an emergency NATO meeting. It really makes you realize how fragile our modern lifestyle actually is. We talk about the cloud like it's invincible, but it's really just a series of very physical, very vulnerable glass threads sitting in the mud at the bottom of the ocean.
Our digital reliance is heavily anchored in physical reality. And we are seeing the friction of that reality in the aerospace and robotic sectors as well. The sources highlight a massive culture clash in aerospace engineering regarding how to iterate physical hardware.
Right, the Blue Origin disaster. Jeff Bezos's massive New Glenn rocket suffered a catastrophic explosion during a hot fire test. That is a $2.5 billion loss in a split second. And analysts say it sets their space ambitions back by at least 2 years. Blue Origin operates on a very cautious traditional aerospace model. Measure 1,000 times, cut once. But cautious perfectionism literally blew up in their face here.
Contrast that with SpaceX's culture of rapid iteration. Build it, fly it, blow it up, learn, and build it faster. The agile software development mindset applied to physical rockets.
Oh.
And that push to bring software-like iteration into the physical world is accelerating the robotics boom we saw this month.
AMW officially began integrating humanoid robots into their German factories. They are using the ADOM model specifically for high-precision battery assembly.
Which predictably ignited a massive labor dispute. The IG Metall labor union immediately launched widespread strikes.
Mm.
They are viewing these autonomous, highly dexterous robots not as tools, but as an existential threat to the blue-collar workforce. It is the exact same dynamic we saw with the 3D artists striking against Metaforge AI, just translated into physical manufacturing.
And it's not just factories. Apple pivoted a massive $4 billion investment away from their defunct car project and toward developing home butler robots. We are rapidly moving toward a reality where these autonomous AI agents we discussed in Section 1 don't just live in our laptops. They have physical, moving bodies in our homes and our workplaces.
But of all the physical and ethical boundaries crossed in May 2026, the most profound and unsettling incident involves the National Transportation Safety Board. It represents the ultimate ethical gray area where technology outpaces human decency.
Oh, this story. This is the definition of a dystopic nightmare. Let's walk through this carefully. When a commercial plane crashes, the NTSB investigates the cockpit voice recorders. Obviously, out of respect for the dead pilots and their grieving families, the NTSB does not release the actual audio of those final moments to the public.
No, never. Instead, for transparency and engineering analysis, they release what are called spectrograms. A spectrogram is a visual mathematical graph of audio. It plots time on the x-axis, the frequency of the sound on the y-axis, and the volume or amplitude is represented by the intensity of the color.
So it looks almost like a colorful heat map or a seismograph.
Yes. It's meant to be purely analytical visual data for acoustic engineers.
It's a graph. But an AI doesn't look at a graph. It looks at a data set. Internet users took the publicly released visual spectrogram images from the tragic crash of UPS Flight 2976. They fed those static images into advanced generative AI audio models.
Well, and the AI was able to reverse engineer the frequency data. It perfectly reconstructed the audio waveform. It resurrected the actual voices of the dead pilots, capturing the exact timbre of their voices, the panic, the alarms from a picture.
The sheer horror of the implications forced the NTSB to immediately lock down 42 separate ongoing crash investigations, scrubbing all acoustic data from public servers. The data was released legally, it was public, but the technology used to interpret it advanced so exponentially fast that it entirely bypassed our established legal and moral frameworks.
The privacy of the deceased, the trauma to the families, a clever algorithm just tore right through it. It proves, without a shadow of a doubt, that just because we can do something mathematically with AI absolutely does not mean we should. Which brings us to the culmination of all these deeply interconnected events. When we synthesize the Taking Game coverage of May 2026, it isn't just a busy news cycle. It is a historical inflection point. It is the precise moment where the limitless, weightless ambition of the software industry violently collided with the hard limits of physical, silicon, human privacy, and ethical decency.
Let's pull the threads together. We have autonomous AI agents so incredibly powerful they can code apps and rewrite dynamic video game narratives on the fly. But they are physically constrained by a global rampocalypse, a severe bottleneck in high bandwidth memory that is actively gentrifying the gaming hardware market. We have incredible new software efficiencies and bot-free retail systems, but accessing them demands the absolute surrender of our social security numbers and volumetric facial scans. We have infinite democratized digital knowledge and open source models, but it's actively being weaponized to mass produce polymorphic zero-day malware and sever our physical undersea cables.
It is a profound paradox. The very technology designed to solve immense complex problems is simultaneously creating unprecedented existential vulnerabilities. And this leaves us with a critical final thought to consider. A scenario that builds on the terrifying convergence of everything we've discussed today.
Lay it on us. What's the ultimate collision here?
Imagine the inevitable intersection of these specific events. We just discussed how mega retailers are now demanding and storing mandatory live facial scans and biometric data just to purchase consumer electronics, creating massive honeypots of biological data.
Right.
We also discussed the catastrophic leak of the completely uncensored 405 billion parameter Llama 4 AI model. And finally, we just saw how advanced AI possesses the terrifying ability to perfectly clone and resurrect human emotion and voice from nothing more than a visual spectrogram.
Oh, wow. I see where this is going.
We are rapidly approaching a moment where identity theft is no longer about bad actors stealing your credit card number or your password. They will have the open source, uncensored AI tools to write the exploits. They will have the stolen biological data, your exact facial geometry from a breached retailer's honeypot. They will have AI capable of perfectly cloning your voice from a 3-second clip on social media. They will be able to seamlessly replicate you as an autonomous digital entity. When the machine has your exact face, your clone voice, your social security number, and is powered by an agentic AI boasting a 4x better rate of honesty to flawlessly impersonate your unique communication style to your family, your bank, or your employer, how do you mathematically or legally prove you are the real human?
That is deeply chilling. It brings us right back to our opening thought. We wanted to believe the internet was this weightless, ethereal cloud that we could just log out of. But that cloud isn't just sitting in the sky anymore. It has descended into our physical reality. And very soon, it might have your face, your voice, your ID, and a mind of its own. Thank you for joining us on this deep dive into the May 2026 tech landscape. It is a brave, complex new world out there. Stay curious, stay critical, and keep exploring. Until next time.